Off the ball, rugby.
Your face popped up on the big screen and
a couple of boos.
There wasn't a couple of boos, there was a resounding boos, but that's the ultimate compliment, you know? Let's not get sensitive about this is what happened.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Welcome along. It is the first post-championship round of the Hurling Pod. We're up early on a Monday in order to record this because, James Scahill, you were a busy man yesterday. You became a chauffeur on the first day of championship. Here we go. Look at Neil McManus there. So what's Neil McManus doing with James Scahill at a pub in Gort?
I think they're doing a nationwide tour as part of Mac's retirement plan. I think they had himself and Chris McNaughton had a mutual friend who was located in the Sarsfields club. She's relocated down there, so they went down to visit herself and her partner on Saturday night. And sure, Galway's only a small country lad, so they said, we'll go from Sarsfields over to Gort, and sure, while we're this far, we may as well go to Innes. But let's just say they're having a few socials, and I became the driver. So in a previous life, Will and Murph, I would have been having to be driven to the game, you know. But because of the new position in the radio, I said, you know what, I have to have some level of maturity. So at least I didn't have a pint after the game.
Well, you see, I was wondering what happened, because someone sent me Aidan Hart's stories from Instagram, and yeah, you got paparazzied. Well, you got paparazzied with the wife having some supermax as well.
Like, I was on my own in the deep lane. So I hadn't eaten from like 11. It was, at that stage, it was 7 o'clock. So I said, you know, I need something quick. Because he didn't give me anything. For that way, so he didn't give me anything. All there was tumbleweeds going across the floor. So it's Supermax is the only option. And of course, I sat in trying to be quiet. And this pest comes along with the phone. And what irks me is the fact that I didn't see him for at least 3 seconds.
Well, was it someone you knew? No.
It's Hart.
Oh, it's Hart. Oh,
I'm sitting in the Jeep outside his establishment. And I'm just working away, getting ready to take off to go home. And next thing you know, I just, whatever way I look, I can see the phone. He didn't even go behind it as a person. He just put the phone to the window. The rat. Straight. And then I texted him. I just said, take that down immediately. And his response was, no, it's priceless.
Yeah, oh no, it's still there. So I was meshing him away and he went, we had a good weekend. But then he was very quick to point out, he was like, to be fair to Skell, he drove us around all weekend, which then sent me to the fact that we saw that picture where Neil McManus is out having a few pints with you during the weekend as well. So the reason that James Skell was driving around, by the way, was that he was at Ennis, where Limerick got their first championship win against Clare since 1990, but it was a Harry Houdini act in the end. The reigning and defending Munster and All-Ireland champions, they were down by 9 points on 53 minutes. It seemed that Clare were coming along with a wet sail. Tony Kelly had made his comeback. Big lift from the crowd at that point. And then Limerick scored 3-6 to 3 points in that last 15 minutes or so of the game. Also, I don't know whether the lads are going to apologise or not, but it turns out that Davy Fitzgerald had Waterford in the long grass all along. So despite predictions on this very pod, which are going to come up in the correspondence, every time the margin gets bigger that Paul Murphy suggested last week, so twice we had 15 points being suggested, it was 12 points is what he said last week. But in the end, the Dacia is bringing off a bit of a surprise, winning by 225 to 125. Davy, by his own admission, says it's going to be different for Waterford now when they come back after the break, because they're no longer seen as these underdogs who are just going to finish bottom of the group, and now there's maybe a bit of expectation back onto them. We talk about Houdini acts. What about Dublin snatching a draw from the jaws of defeat at Wexford? They were 5 points down late on, but Micheál Donoghue's side, goals from Danny Sutcliffe and Keno Sullivan to thank for a share of the spoils in Leinster in their game against Wexford. Wexford now haven't beaten Dublin in 6 years, and it leaves third place wide open in the Leinster Championship as a result of that draw. The concern for Kilkenny off the back of their game in Nolan Park, no real worry on the scoreline, won by 32 points against Antrim, but Owen Cody, Adrian Mullen, Owen Murphy all going off injured during the game. They play Galway next in Salt Hill. Galway, a dogged performance from Carlo on their return to Leinster, had that game at 4 points with about 20 minutes to go, but Conor Cooney's 1-10 helping Galway to win the game. They scored 1-7 without reply after that point when it came back to 4, and so it's a winning start for Galway and Kilkenny, last year's two finalists in the Leinster Championship. This is, of course, the Hurling Pod. It is brought to you by Bord Gáis Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship. We've already heard from James Skell. There was a bit of a prodding from Paul Murphy as well. How are you getting on, lads?
Good. How are you keeping?
Really good, yeah. That was a good intro, Will. Credit.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, tell the truth now. that straight off the cuff or is that off a screen in front of you?
I think a mix of it. I had the results in front of me and then I kind of ad-lib around the results sitting in front of me.
Good, professional. Nice.
You know, there you go. It's what I do generally, Skell, you know, all the time.
It's your job. If that was me, I would have gone off in five tangents and come back around and then asked a random question.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't write that all out because the problem is if you wrote all that out, you'd end up tripping over something and then you'd have to go back over something else and you'd make an absolute balls of it. So when we sit down at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Monday to record a podcast, I think it's better that we kind of freewheel just a little bit around this. So interesting weekend of championship. I think Ennis is probably the place to start because all perception scale would have been changed very differently to what we would have been feeling about Clare based on that first half performance from Limerick and even up to realistically the 53rd minute compared to what happened when Limerick really let loose in that last 15 or so.
Mm-hmm. I suppose if you're a Clare supporter looking back and I suppose the question you have to ask yourself is where did it all go wrong? You know what I mean? And I think when you're looking at it on television versus live, you get two different kind of perceptions. So the benefit of me watching it live was I could see Clare's structure in the first half versus the structure in the second half. And for 53 minutes, they got everything right. They got, you know, the breaking ball was done right. Their puck-out choices was right. Their defensive setup was right. You know, and critically for me, their half forward line and full forward line setup was correct. And every ball that went into the Clare forwards, particularly the full forward line, they seemed to retain it in some form. So that's not saying every ball was scored, but they seemed to retain it and hold it up and not allow Limerick to come out easily. If you watch the first half, Limerick had, you know, they did all to do to exit their own backline on numerous occasions because of such the harrying that was going on. Then after 53 minutes with the Tony Kelly introduction, like, I don't think they're connected, to be honest. I think a cynic will say it's part of their downfall. It wasn't really. He went in there at 11, but what happened was their forward line lost complete shape and structure. And Sean Finn then became kind of loose. And Sean Finn was okay, to be honest, for 50 minutes. He was okay. And then after that, then he started mopping up ball after ball. And he was kind of the catalyst, the start of this Limerick run game that we've seen for years. And once that happened, you know, you can't stop them. Keane Lynch then powered into the game. I think by my count, he had nine possessions in 20 minutes, which is a colossal level. You know, if you do that pro rata over the course of the game, he's up on 30-odd possessions, you know. But he was kind of... He was like the nucleus of their comeback, but it really started at the back. Like if Clare managed to keep their width and their depth, you know, they'd have seen the game out. But they all kind of retreated out and allowed the Limerick backs to exit. And we've seen this numerous times that whereby, and it's been said on most podcasts and most television in terms of GAA that you can't allow Limerick to come at you. You have to push up on top of them, suffocate them, you know, and try to keep the battle up in your forward zone. Didn't happen. They let them out and they started building from the back. And it's like it's a tsunami coming at you. It was great to watch and witness in person closely because the gantry in Innes is a really good position to see. It feels like you're very close to the pitch, really leaning out over it. So when it gets going, you can see how you know the pieces begin to move into motion. And like with Lynch and Adam English came on and was effective. I think he had three possessions in the first 24 seconds. You know, the minute he came on, he got three possessions, which is like Hegarty came into it. O'Dolig, I know he'd be disappointed with the goal chance that he missed. But he contributed and he was retaining the ball. That was the difference. So you had O'Donnell and you know McCarthy were retaining the ball in the first half for Clare. Glenn and Flanagan weren't. Then the second half, you know, O'Dolig managed to retain it. And then Hegarty started causing damage on the wing. So I think he was kind of a mix. Some people were pointing to a Clare collapse. Others would say it was a great Limerick comeback. I think it's a mixture of both. I think Clare fed into Limerick's hands, which allowed Limerick to come back. And once that train started rolling, geez, it was... It's going to be fair hard to stop. Now, that doesn't either excuse the two goals that would be conceded, you know, particularly the first and the second, for me, you know what I mean? I'd be very disappointed now if those had been past me as a defenceman or as a keeper. So that's a 6-point turnaround. And to go and get 6 points off Limerick is extremely difficult. So I know there's places to look at, but ultimately the Limerick train was unreal watching the motion.
Yeah, I'll throw a few bits and pieces at you about how this is a repeating pattern for Limerick in a moment. But before that, Murph, Jackie Tyrrell, your old teammate, his take on this last night was Clare lost it more than Limerick won it, which is the quote that he said. I wrote it down last night after he said it. Is that a fair reflection on what happened? Or was it more a case of Limerick just went into this zone they go into sometimes, like the All-Ireland final last year?
I think certainly, like if you look at it, there was 9 points up, 10 minutes to go, and it was almost as if Clare gave Limerick the fuel to the fire that allowed them to go at it. Because you can do lots of things to stem the tide if a team is coming at you and you're 9 points up. At the end of the day, the clock is on your side. Not saying you slow... Well, yeah, you slow down the game, but you also just make sensible decisions. Like, Clare had opportunities in that time where it even came back towards 6 points, where they could have got a point or two and just pushed it out that small bit more. But with every mistake that they made, it almost added oxygen to the fire of Limerick that it just kept coming at them. Because Limerick's play was at times disjointed in the first half. It wasn't the slick Limerick we would have seen. Even into the second half, they came into it a small bit more, but it still didn't feel like a dominant dominant performance from Limerick by any means. But it's almost as if Limerick smelt that there was chaos happening within the Clare team as they were coming back at them. Like, after the first goal, and the goals came in quick succession, which again only amplifies the feeling. But, you know, Gerard Hegarty said it after the game, where he said that they didn't panic. They didn't appear to panic. They've been in this position so many times. And I think so much of it does come back to that, where Limerick's mentality is they've been in this position where they've been down, you know, by 5, 6, 7 points over the last 5 years against teams, and they don't panic. So mentally, that's just hardwired into them that they'll keep going at it. Where you'd have to ask, was there a mental frailty there with Clare that, you know, once that bit of momentum started coming at once Limerick started coming at them, it was just this, oh no, here we go again, kind of a feeling that we're going to fall away. You'd nearly imagine that it would have been better for Clare if they stayed within touching distance of Limerick. I know that might sound a small bit mad to say, but they wouldn't have had an opportunity to take the foot off the pedal, you know, as in if they were in striking distance, they had to make every opportunity count. But because they were 9 points up, it almost felt as if that they got a little bit complacent. There was a few opportunities that if they got them in the first half, I think they would have scored them, because in the first half, when the opportunities came, they made really good decisions. They took their scores, and, you know, because there was very fine margins. But when they went 9 points up, it almost felt as if they took their foot off the pedal a small bit, and that fed into Limerick coming back at them. But I mean, if you look at the last goal where Gerard Hegarty is in 40 yards of space, I mean, would Gerard Hegarty found himself in 40 yards of space in the first half? Some people may put that down to that, you know, the legs in Clare were just so tired after 68 minutes that they couldn't keep into it. But it was also decision-making as well, you know, two free Clare defenders in the backs, and you have Gerard Hegarty standing absolutely free. So there was just lots of things, but the sense of panic when Limerick came at Clare, you know, you could feel it from watching the game, whatever that felt like on the pitch or whatever it felt like in Ennis. I felt there was a lot of things fit into it, but it was certainly that the door was left open for Limerick. And when you leave the door open for Limerick, you know, they just came at you. So I do think there was both. You know, I think there was a, I mean, 9 points up, 10 minutes to go. Again, you have to come back to it. It's an incredible position to be in. And regardless how good Limerick are, you think there's a lot of things you could possibly do in that time. But look, waking up this morning, Brian Lowen said it after the game. The way he looked at it was, he said there wasn't a lot of positives to take. Now, after 60 minutes of hurling, there was huge amounts of positives. But that final 10 minutes, I think, is where Brian Lowen will look at and go, well, that's where we were dead and buried. That's where we were killed off. And, you know, after 60 minutes of really good hurling, it's amazing to say that 10 minutes of hurling could leave you feeling like that walking away from Ennis, you know. So it's just, look, it was a remarkable second half, I'd wonder what the Clare players feel like this morning, waking up knowing that they had him into the pin of their collar, and to let that through their fingers is, I'd imagine, it's a very tough thing to take.
Skell, the pattern which I mentioned, so Chrissy O'Connor's article from last night summed this up. So he said, last championship game that Limerick played in was the All-Ireland final last July. They were 5 points down before they outscored Kilkenny 19 points to 4. He says, Limerick looked off the pace for 50 minutes yesterday, but in the first half of last year's All-Ireland final, we looked at Limerick with 8 shots from play, 14 in total, but they went into overdrive after that. Sound familiar is the line he runs to say what happened yesterday. So, Limerick had 19 shots in the first half on Sunday afternoon. They only converted 8 of them up till half-time. They missed their first 4 shots of the second half as well. So, serious echoes of that misfiring in the All-Ireland final last year. Very similar numbers. But then they blew Clare's 9 point to smithereens, as he said. In the end, off the Clare puck out, they'd sourced no scores in the first half, but then they scored 4 points off turnovers after that. In that late burst of 3-6, 1-2 mined off the Clare restart, 1-3 from turnovers, and the other 1-1 came from their own puck out being effective. Said over the afternoon, Limerick sourced 1-6 off Nicky Quaid's puck outs going long. And then he pointed out that after that, Shane O'Donnell, despite the fact he looked at the stats, he only got 1 point during the game. He points out that he was Clare's most productive forward. He set up 1-3 across the game and another very good goal chance as well. And Peter Duggan was getting good ball in the first half. But then Clare weren't getting the service to O'Donnell and to Duggan in the second half. So I guess to take up the first point about not panicking, there you go. Limerick can go through a spell where they're misfiring. Maybe it's not quite happening for them. But when they get into gear, they just have this effectiveness that maybe no other team has.
For sure. There was no panic associated with them at all yesterday. And you can tell, too, by body language. Sometimes when you see teams getting kind of overran heavily, you'll see bits of bickering, bits of arm waving, bits of, you know, engagement with the sideline trying to look for answers. And I didn't really see any of that whatsoever. I saw Kylie and Canuck being a bit animated with the fourth divisions and linesmen. That's the way they all are. That was the cap of it. There was nothing more. And it was strange too, because you look at the score and distance, and you think of, I think the last point of the first half was the 30th minute, and they didn't score again in the second half until like 47, something like that. So they had 16, 17 minutes of a gap, but there was no score. And in that period, you know, Clare made a bit of hay. Like, in fairness, if you look at the two purple patches, you know, Clare's whole purple patch, if you want to call it that, was, let's say, from minute 6 to minute, 53. And in fairness, they rattled out 112 or 115, excuse me.
That's a big purple patch as well.
It's a long purple patch, you see. That's the thing. And it's very hard to maintain that level of energy for the whole game, you know. And we've seen teams come at Limerick before where they've had energy for a period, but it's impossible to sustain for some reason. I don't know how Limerick do it, but it's hard to sustain. But then they got their purple patch for 20 minutes and they got 3-6, you know, so they became extremely efficient. I said yesterday that their ability to switch the energy. You know yourself, when you're 9 points down, it's so hard to find something to cling on to get the ball rolling again. But, you know, everyone points to the goal, but they had 4 points clocked on before that. You know, they were still gnawing away at the lead, and then the goal comes, and next thing, you know, you're back into serious contention. If you get down to, you know, I think a respectable single-digit gap is like 4 or 5 points. That's well within touching distance. And if it goes beyond that, you're trying to stop the Rotters mob. But the minute they got it back, you could feel it too. And the energy was sucked out of the crowd, just literally sucked out. Where I was standing yesterday, to my left seemed to be all Clare, and to my right seemed to be all Limerick. And just the sound turned from the left over to the right, and it was just, it sucked out. And Clare couldn't stop it. Then when it started to go Limerick's way, Clare started waving arms. Clare started engaging with the sideline. Clare started going back to each other. Do you know what I mean? So there was an element of capitulation and panic. And then they just couldn't stop it. And they lost, as I said to you before, they lost all structure and shape. And if you look at Limerick, yes, they had, there was a long purple patch for Clare, but they never really lost their structure. Do you know what I mean? They always maintained, tried to play the way they play. And like, there were some of the shot selection in the first half, you'd say, oh, yeah, some of them weren't on. Others, though, they were on. It was just bad execution on their behalf. And like we said before, Limerick could turn around and have 50 shots in a game and come away with 30 points. So they were on course to having, you know, 18, 19 shots in the first half, they're on course, shooting the lights out in terms of numbers. But, I suppose I can't help but think, like, what's going to happen Clare now? Because next week, with their next game, someone's knocked out. I can't see anyone. Maybe I could be wrong now. Maybe if you lose two games in a row, especially in a five-team championship, you're out, you're finished. So the pressure on them now is monumental. So whatever pressure they felt coming in today on the back of a really good league campaign is going to transfer down to Parkview next week. That's going to be interesting to see how many what transpires there.
Yeah. Oh no, two teams back against the wall, a result needed. That's the jeopardy of the Munster Championship, and that's why we love the fact that these teams are going up against each other week on week. And look, I suppose, Murph, the controversial decisions, may as well give you a first shout on it. Last night, Don Logue saw the two goals as square ball situations. What's your take on both of them?
Well, going with the first one, I thought the first one was, I know Don Logue had a chance to freeze frame it, but I thought that was okay at the time. Mm. I see what he's saying, but look, it's again, does it come down to the fact that the referees get one look at it? I thought that was okay. I didn't really have much of a problem because the ball is flying in. It's harder to define. Because with Garrod Hegarty's one, the ball was lower down. You could maybe say that there was a foot inside the square. By the letter of the law, and fairness, Don Logue said that, by the letter of the law, it's a square ball. They're very fine margins, though. When you're talking that one foot was inside the square, I think what a lot of people felt that it was a square ball for was that because Galan was at the post and the ball hits the post, that he must have been completely inside the square and that was it. But I would be kind of saying that, no, if, look, I mean, I know by the letter of the law, if there's a foot inside the square, it's a square ball. That's very marginal stuff. Like, that's very marginal. If you're looking at two umpires, are looking at Garrod Hegarty, who's out to the far left, the referee's looking at him, and everybody's trying to judge Gillan's body position in the moment, I think that there's margins enough there for error to say that, look, that was absolutely fine, just get on with it. And I think, do you know what, I actually saw quite a bit of talk on, I know a lot of people were saying that it was a square ball and so on, but I saw a lot of people saying as well, well, look, you know, at that stage, they were nearly just accepting it, that it was small margins. If you're picking at them, you know, you're plucking at straws, really, to say that, you know, that's really what changed the game. Like, Limerick were on a rampage at that stage. The first goal created the momentum. It was the first glimmer of, okay, we have a chance here. And that goal, when Burns, because it was a free that you expected Burns to pop over. Similarly enough, you know, Burns on the freeze, I think he hit one or two wide in the first half. You know, so there was kind of, there was nothing certain with it. So to get a goal of a return from that, you know, is a big return. I think Ever Quilligan, you know, won't be happy either. He kind of came into no man's land. He was on the line. If he was going to come out and get involved, with Cleary and Galan there, you'd be saying come out and just, you know, get in between the two of them and absolutely bat it, or stay back on your line, because if there is to be a deflection, you have a chance to react to it. So look, the first one, I've no issue with it. I can see people arguing for the second one, but I didn't have much of an issue with it either. I saw two different versions of it online, where one, people were circling the feet of Aaron Galan where the ball was, and there's two versions of it. One said that he was in, one said that he was out. So look, to be honest, I'm kind of leaning towards it. And actually, there was an article in the Examiner last night. Brian Gavin had an article as well saying that he actually felt it was in. So it's very fine margins there between, I'd say it's split 50-50 in terms of between in or out. I'm in the out camp. I'm saying that, look, he was just on the line there. I think he just about timed his run.
Yeah, I think in real time, my reaction was this has to be square ball. Because of exactly that, because when he's there for the rebound, you're thinking he had to be a lot closer to goal. And then, as they were saying in RTÉ, they looked at about 7 or 8 different camera angles, and Joe Canning calling it in real time, looking back at it just afterwards, he said it's absolutely marginal. Even on the Sunday game, when, as you say, the freeze framed it, they looked at it from the side. It's very difficult from that point. And I would say the most favourable angle is the one where someone's put the two red circles on it in social media, where you see the ball entering the square, which is the rule, and Galan is maybe standing on the line at that point when he gets circled. But it's very difficult in motion to tell whether he was inside or outside at the time. And obviously then it's a complication of it hitting the post and coming back to him as well. So very, 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 very tight. But I think not the reason that Clare lost the game. On the goalkeeper side of things, Gal, because we did have a comment which came in the Instagram overnight asking about the way that Quilligan defended the goal as well. I think it was, I will give them their credit here, it came in from Tom in Dublin, who phrase it as, do Clare need to look at their goalkeeper situation after the goals they conceded? I think the one where you would question would be the free that goes in. So I don't know what you would have done in that situation, where Conor Cleary is obviously trying to stop Galan. Quilligan comes out a little bit, gets caught in the wrong area, and the ball ends up going to the net. So what's your take as a goalkeeper about what happened there?
I think there's shared responsibility here between Cleary and Quilligan. I think, let's give you an example. Murph, if you were in Cleary's position and I was in Quilligan, and I called keeper, right? What I would expect you to do is push Galan out and break it through to me. Yeah. So when that happens, right? So first of all, stay in your line. Stay in your line. When you've 1v1, stay in your line and get behind the line of the ball. So I'm always coaching goalkeepers, get behind the line of the ball, right? If it gets a deflection, not your fault. It is not your fault. Like, that's other people's responsibility to stop that deflection from happening. If someone catches in the forwards, not your problem. But if the flight comes to you, and you're not in the line of the ball and you can't catch it, that is your problem. So two things happened. Ever came out, he should have stayed in his line, keeping the line of the ball and catch it. Same thing, I happened to me one day against Clare as well, whereby I got behind the Tony Kelly sideline just here, and I had no option but just to stand tall, you could say, I will, right? Below and hurdles, and just let it hit me. Do you know what I mean? Because it was coming in so quick, and there was hurdles this way, there was just, once it hit me in the line of the ball, it wasn't going in. Do you know what I mean? If I rushed out, that was going to be a goal. So the same situation here. He has to stay in his line. He has to call break or keeper. then Murphy or Cleary has to push Gillan out and then catch the ball and move out. That, to me, would be, you know, fairly straightforward in terms of setup. That's not reinvented the wheel here. That's nothing new. That's a fairly standard kind of call between the keeper and a fullback or cornerback. So I'd be just, that's probably the goal I'd look back with the highest level of disappointment, to be honest, because that's a structural issue and a communication issue, which is very easy to fix.
Yeah. The second one for you, Skell, obviously you got to see it from the gantry. Did it look like it was an absolute square ball from there?
Admittedly, in real time, I was certain it was a square ball. It was actually hard for us to see what happened. Some of us actually thought that when Hegarty hit it across, that actually Gillan stopped it. I thought in real time he stopped it and put it in.
Hmm.
We didn't see it coming off the post at all. Maybe it's got to do with sun reflection, just angles. So when I got a chance to watch it back, I was going, oh, so sure. Even the Limerick Live 95 guys beside me were saying, yeah, that was a square ball. But when you can freeze frame it, when you have the advantage to technology, which we've covered before with referees, you know, then you can make kind of a, what I would class as an informed decision. But the referee can't make an informed decision. He's making a decision on, you know, a millisecond of a situation. So I don't blame Conor Lyons at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. You know, because I can see, if I put myself in his shoes, I would have made something similar, I could say. And he went to his own priors. He went through the right process. He slowed it down. He didn't make rash decisions. He went in. They had a discussion. So it became kind of unanimous between the three, because you can see on the footage they're all nodding, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then out they go. So, but look, it's a very, very close call. Close call.
The only camera as well that, like, you know, the Sunday game had was the one in the top corner of the goal. So the only time you see the ball the first time, it's halfway across the square. So like, it doesn't give you a fair reflection of the ball passing the side of the square to come in. And like, a lot happens in that time. And I think, to be honest, like, you know, there's a lot of people very passionate about saying it was clear cut. It's absolutely not clear cut. It's exactly an example you would use. I don't know if you're at a referees conference, if you're at whatever, if you're debating rules as to why this is so tough. And so it's understandable why the camp is split 50-50. And what I would say on that is that my thinking with these situations is that when it's so split 50-50, I would rather, even as a defender, I would rather the benefit of the doubt goes with the forward. Because you see some people saying that square ball should maybe go, that it might benefit to actually scoring goals and different things. But that aside, you know, if the margins are so fine, I think the we should be looking towards giving the score as opposed to cancelling it out if we're in any bit of doubt. So I think in this decision, you know, despite the fact when I read Brian Gavin's article, I was like, geez, this is a man with, you know, experience. This is a man who, you know, is renowned for benefiting or for promoting games and being a really good referee within games. But it's the one thing where I kind of say, well, actually, I disagree here. From everything I've seen, you know, I'd be going, that was a fine goal. Just get out of it.
Can I ask you a question, Murph, as a defenceman?
Yeah.
Check the three goals on his example, right? Do you think that the clear defending was up to standard?
You could...
Think of the three of them now.
Yeah, yeah. You picked through the first one there, and obviously you explained exactly what should have been done there. The one with O'Dolig's goal, which I think lads would be disappointed about, was, you know, two lads went to Hegarty as opposed to one going and putting yourself between Hegarty and O'Dolig. So if he does flick it, well, then there's a person there, but two lads went, and then it just comes down to a clash of hurls. Three lads swung the hurls. Hegarty was the one who got the hurl to it, and now O'Dolig is in open space again. I don't think Quilligan will be overly happy. The ball passed him by fairly. Look, it wasn't, but it struck with a whole lot of pace. Okay, he bounced it into the ground. He did the right thing, but I think he'll be still disappointed. For the last goal, look, I mean, Hegarty was in 40 yards of space. I mean, the opportunity should have never arose, and I think even at that. I don't know, is it Conlon going to him? You know, Conlon went to maybe time his run to him. You just have to run straight at him there and don't buy any sidesteps around him. Go at him and hit him, because Garrod Hegarty's position there is a goal-scoring position. Never mind Gillan scores it. You have to just run at the man at this stage. I mean, it's last chance saloon. Go and hit him. If it means giving away a bit of a black card, so be it. But like, that looked like a nailed-on goal opportunity as it was. And for me, it would have been a case of throw yourself at him, hope for the best, hope the ball takes a good break. But no, certainly with the three of them, there was three different examples of where the door was left open for Limerick. It wasn't just clean cut that they completely ripped the lads open. You know, there was decision-making there that contributed to the goals as well.
Correct.
Yeah. Brian Lowen, by the way, agrees with Skell on this one. He called them three shocking goals from our perspective they conceded. Skell, when it comes to Limerick, John Kiely admitted afterwards, and the phrase he used was, some of our lads will be disappointed in their performance today. Maybe it'll light their fire. There were some lads taken off there who have not played to the same level they normally would. Like, we kind of have Tom Morrissey as an 8, 9 out of 10 player in every game. Didn't really happen for him. Will O'Donoghue was taken off. Adam English, Dunico Dalig had a good impact when they came in. Lynch, by his very high standards, had quiet periods during the game as well. Yeah. Is there that possibility that this is actually a massive motivator now for some of those players who didn't come to the fore as we would have expected first round?
Well, let's go back a few years ago. Let's go back 7 years to John Kelly's first game. So there's only six players on that squad that have remained in today's team. So like he's turned over panels before. So it's not as if he hasn't. He's not as if he's stuck with the same 15 over the course of 7 years, which some people might think, you know. But he had six lads on that team on that day that are in today's team, and he started introducing debutants. Debutants have since become multiple all-stars, hurdle of the years, etc. So there's nothing to say right now that he's going to get this team and start introducing people. I'm not going to say Adam English and Dunico Dalig are going to be future hurlers here. Potentially they could be, but at the moment they're not, right? But when you look at the game in real time yesterday, they weren't getting the same change out of personnel. Like, you know, Will O'Donoghue wasn't his usual colossal self. You know, Tom Morrissey wasn't his usual free-scoring, 5 point a game, you know, assisting self. Seamus Flanagan wasn't his usual shooting from great angles, you know, top scorers, etc., himself. So those three personnel didn't play to the levels that they would aspire to, and then probably John Kiely wanted that. So they introduced people who made immediate impacts. So it's not as if you introduce personnel that just see out the game and become part of it all. They came in and they made an instant impact. So O'Donoghue came away 1-1. Probably should have had a second goal, if you like.
Yeah.
Only just a bit of a misdrop. And he retained the ball fierce well. Adam English has got a numerous possessions. So if Keane Lynch was on 9 possessions in 20 minutes, Adam English held the ball a number of times too. And it still made a couple of rash decisions, getting blocked down twice, etc. But that's just him getting in early doors, if you like. And you contrast that versus the clear impact. So the clear impact was, I know Tony Kelly got a point from a free and a point from play, but at that stage it was relatively nil, to be honest. You know, so if you look at what came off the Limerick bench versus what came off the Clare bench, and if you were to assess them, you know, in terms of capability in today's game, you'd say Clare introduced better people than Limerick, if you know what I mean. But Limerick's output was far better from the subs. So I think Kiely will go away. He's after winning the game, coming from a dead position. He's after introducing, you know, three guys that made an immediate impact and they won the game. Like, that's, he has to be happy. Like, and he was extremely, when I watched the body language of the Limerick lads at post-game and management, they were pumped. I mean, really pumped. They knew the kind of, I don't want to say get out of jail, because they kicked the door down to get out of jail. They broke out of jail, if you like, you know. But it really meant something. It really meant a lot, you know what I mean? Because it looked like there was a lot of murmurs, rumours, external pressure, you name it, etc., coming into this game. And it just, for 53 minutes, it was a shit show, you know. And after that then, it was awesome to watch. Yeah.
Murph, I'm going to play a bit of Gerard Hegarty in a moment, but he probably summed up exactly what Scale has said, which is some of those Limerick players coming off the pitch, you would swear that was the first big game that they'd won, that this wasn't a team who've collected so many medals over the last 6-7 seasons. There was that kind of feeling of a massive victory about them. I mean, there's plenty of pictures of Hegarty with the way he was celebrating coming off after he was named man of the match. So that maybe shows the hunger that's still there within that Limerick camp as well, that they didn't want to go out and have a losing start to championship here, and that hunger was there when they needed it.
Yeah, and I don't think any of these Limerick boys are looking at it from the point of view of five in a row or anything like that. I think there's, you know, just a huge sense of pride there in, I'm not going to say their reputation, not to say that it's ego or anything, but like, I think these lads pride themselves a lot in terms of how they react in tough situations. You know, they've proven themselves several times before, and, you know, maybe a lot of people, not to say people questioned it, but off the back of Clare winning the league final, people were tipping Clare quite a bit, and maybe then even when Clare went up, they could sense the feeling in the grounds was that Limerick are best. And, you know, they never believed it for a second. Their lads coming off the bench had a huge impact. Gerard Hegarty himself in the interview I saw after the game, he was saying that he didn't even realise they were down by 9 points and different things. And you have to kind of say, look, whether he did or he didn't, like, you believe lots of things that he was saying there is absolutely true, that they never panicked. They didn't appear to panic, despite the fact that, you know, their game maybe wasn't as fluid as it normally is. You know, all the things he said, it just echoes of a team that they were there playing yesterday to be the best that they could yesterday. Like, I mean, everybody's looking at the five in a row and can they win six Munster, all these different things. But you have to look at yesterday. They feel like a team that, well, we're going down here, we're playing Clare in an unbelievable task. We're only looking at that. we will use whatever players we need to use. Nobody is dispensable here, or not dispensable, should I say, that, you know, everybody can come in. And I think something that the Limerick players recognise as well is that's 100% healthy. You know, I think a lot of people think that the desired place for a manager to be is have 15 set players that you're going to use and that's it. And that may be a case by just naturally, that may just happen every so often. But these players will know that the healthiest position to be in is when there's competition. And if you don't perform to your ability, well, then the next player comes in and is savage to get into the team, takes their opportunity. All their subs took their opportunities. And if you were to look at any other team or to ask any other manager, if you were to be given the attribute of all your subs who come on, they take their opportunity and they hurl incredibly well, you know, that would be an unbelievable trait to have in a team. So there's so many things from it that, you know, you kind of feel like you're nearly kicking yourself that in some way you might have thought you could doubt this Limerick team in lots of ways, you know, because they even when you think you know them well enough, they prove you wrong another way, you know. So it's look, it was just incredible, and it was interesting even hearing Hegarty, a man I haven't heard interviewed. He has been interviewed previously, but not a huge amount. It was a great time to catch him just after the game, and it was a really good interview as well.
Yeah, so Hegarty, 3 points. This is what he had to say to Tommy Rooney after the game in Ennis.
I actually genuinely didn't know we were 9 points down with 53 minutes go. I wouldn't be taking too much notice of the scoreboard, but look, we weren't too disappointed where we were at halftime. Obviously, we weren't happy to be 5 points down, but we knew that we actually felt we were playing well in the first half. We just didn't take our opportunities. As you can feel there's a fairly solid breeze going down the half. You know, as the second half goes on, opportunities will, if you keep going, opportunities will open up. Fellas get tired. We're so confident the lads that come off the bench, you know, to keep us at the level we need to be at. So you just got to keep looking away. I know it's cliche, but I suppose we've been there so many times over the years, Sammy. We're in that position. And coming down the stretch, we always feel if we're in the game, we know how to finish it. And again, you know, I suppose we did that today again, thankfully.
How can you wrestle it back, though, when the momentum is against you so much? Like, did the energy just come your way? Or was it a change? Or was it one of the subs coming off? Or what was it, lad?
Sure, you have to. You know, if you don't, the game will get away from you. Like, I suppose the game got away from us in the league semi-final, and we learned a lot from that. You know, I suppose last year, we probably did. We weren't in that position too many times where we did lose. And you learn a lot from a loss. And again, as I said, in the league semi-final, the second half, it was, looking back in it, it was disappointing that we let the game get away from us. So, fellas, step up. You know, big moments happen in championship games. That's the beauty of the sport we're playing. And I suppose if you don't step up, fellas, don't step up, the game gets away from you. And we didn't allow that to happen today, which is brilliant.
Just before we park the Limerick Clare game, is it true for either of you? Now, Skell, I suppose it's probably different for you when you're in goals, because maybe you look up at the scoreboard more often. But genuinely, you must be aware of what the score is all the time.
Ooh, I am, because I've no mental mark.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have time to be chatting to umpires and looking at the scoreboard. it's tricky to get away from. Like, obviously, if the game is behind, we're in my position, you're kind of looking to see what way can we shape it to, you know, to get back to parity. But Murph, like, you're a different story. You've got a man to worry about. Like, the scoreboard is not your issue. Your job is to keep the scoreboard down on their behalf.
Yeah. but to be fair, if my man is rattling the net, I am very aware of the score.
So. Or at least the people in the crowd are telling you.
Yeah. I don't remember a game where I was surprised to see the score. That's probably the best way to put it. Like, I mean,
yeah.
I wasn't going around with every score that goes up seeing what it is, but I do remember taking, you know, you're obviously going to take a glance, go, okay, we're up by four, we're down by four, we need a, you know, this, that or the other. But you know, look, I don't doubt him either. Like, I mean, I'm sure it was a hectic scenario they were in. Like, when you're down by nine, I'm sure it could feel the same as being down by six, you know, as in like that you're just going, well, we need to go and find two or three scores here anyway. So look, whatever the mentality is anyway from Garrod Hegarty and Limerick boys, it works. Maybe just don't look at the scoreboard anymore and wait till the referee blows his whistle at the end.
Right, let's have a total and complete change in direction here, because the people of Waterford have been critical, lads. So I had to prepare this last night for a start.
In our mad pursuit of a scoop, we members of the press sometimes make mistakes. Rock Bottom would like to make the following corrections.
So you saw a few of them there that came in. I've collated some of them here just to throw back at the lads. This was fully expected, and I would put at least 85% of this on the fact that Paul Murphy said Cork by 12 last week. He did not say 15. Up the Daisha 24, which is a fairly new account by the looks of it. 12 points win for Cork, says Murphy. 6 laughing emojis. On YouTube, very quickly. This is why I like, especially if I'm going to assume that user PN3BO1K92V is a Waterford supporter. I liked it pretty much the minute that Waterford had won that game. They went directly to YouTube to last week's show to stick up. Well, boys, what are your thoughts now? Three laughing emojis. And we had Michael Doherty. "'Twill be worth listening to the pod later. Skettle eating humble pie over the Dacian and Davy Fitz. Murph's 12 points broke the bookies." Three laughing emojis. Kieran Dowling then last night. "Is Cork by 15 points on that?" In reference to the fact we're doing a pod today. "Or did you just pick up someone random from the street to give a more considered and educated opinion? Maybe someone who was at a few matches."
I love the fact that you were never going to get the break of a ball from a profile called Up the Day She's 24.
No, you were screwed from the start.
You were scuffing straight away at that one. I'm surprised, actually. Like, I mean, to be honest here, I don't think Skettle has much to defend himself there. I saw the one about humble pie and I was like, Skettle didn't do a whole lot wrong. I mean, he was given a verdict on the team that had won 2 of 16 round robin games. So I think Skettle, you just went by 3 or 4 points.
I think I went Cork by, did I go Cork by 3? 4. Because I backed the handicap. I backed Cork minus 3. Of course.
That was it, yeah.
Mm. I never back Cork again. Ever. as someone in this group said, it's like having Manchester United in your accumulator. They're just going to let you down.
Yeah. Well, I left myself wide open. 12 points went, oh God, I wouldn't mind. It was Aideen that kicked me first. She was like, "What were you on about?" I said, "Do you know what? I completely came off the fence with that one. And now I'm back up on the fence. I've glued my hands to the fence. I'm calling draws from now on." So it was just, but the amazing thing about it was, like, you know, afterwards, after I watched the game, I was just going, like, Cork just arrived on, and it felt as if they thought, we're going to arrive on here. It's almost as if, whatever about us saying who's going to win and the general public saying who's going to win, it almost felt like Cork just completely bought it. And they arrived on and thought they'd nothing to do. And suddenly Jamie Barron hits the net, and all the aggression is with Waterford. And Cork are now scrambling. It's like that thing when they bring the mentality to the game. You can't reverse it. Whatever you brought to the game, whatever you brought to Welsh Park, you can't just change that during it. And everything was just so lackadaisical. And I was just watching it going, like, we saw, first of all, from Waterford, we didn't see any of this in the league. And then suddenly then it comes to Cork as well, who are, you know, during the league, they showed great kind of flickers of what they're capable of and different things. And, you know, yesterday then, just nothing that resembled anything they were doing in the league. So it was just, you know, it was a real humbling experience, I'd say, now for Cork. And it's amazing to see what it does for the rest of the championship now. Like, as you were saying earlier with the whole Clare and Limerick game, you know, Clare going down to Cork next week, automatically now it completely changes the dynamic. And it was just, you know, it's the grenade we weren't really expecting, I suppose, from the weekend.
Yeah, I feel like we may well be apologising to Tipperary people now at this stage as well, or at least by the end of the league. But never mind, we'll put a compilation video together for that by the time it comes around as well. I don't know, Murph, whether your opinion changed when you saw the teams that were named on Thursday night and into Friday as well, whereby, like, Waterford were back towards full strength again. And you mentioned Jamie Barron, who gets the goal. The fact they had Caelum Lyons, Tadhg De Burke again was really good. Bennett and Hutchinson both there doing damage in the forward line. That team that we got to see was quite different to some of the lineups we saw during the league as well. That's part of this too.
Yeah, absolutely. And even the formation, like, the formation was more orthodox structure than we would have seen previously. There was lots of times we pointed to games during the league where you were looking at, you know, 8-9 lads around the middle sector, very flat setup. There was no depth to it at all, and teams were carving through them. But when you look at how they set up yesterday, you know, one thing Waterford fans were crying out for was Desi Hutchinson being closer to goal. Desi Hutchinson's closer to goal. He was on the freeze. He was involved straight away. Okay, he wasn't maybe from open play on the scoreboard as much in the first half, even compared to Jamie Barron, but he was creating a lot, and he was a very, you know, evident danger for the Cork defenders. Like, they were having to keep an eye on him. But everybody else then was contributing. Mike Kiley was getting on balls. He was, you know, he was causing a lot of problems. But they had runners coming through the middle. Then you had Caelum Lyons, you had Jamie Barron. Even the half back line, like, Tadhg De Burke just started mopping up balls. That platform that we've seen for Waterford for years, where he picks up balls, comes running out, pops it off, and Waterford now in the attack. You know, so many of the things that we didn't see this year so far, but we've seen other years, came back and were present. And you know, it's a really good achievement for Waterford, because a lot of those players haven't been involved. They haven't got time under their belts hurling. You know, you're looking at Bennett and these lads going off injured during the league. There's lots of indicators there where you're saying it would have been tough for a team to come yesterday and perform, but they did. You know, it was probably the first time, I suppose, it is the first time that Waterford had that team on the pitch and had all their, I suppose, their main players back. nevertheless, you have to say it was always going to be a tough challenge to come and you know, perform against a Cork team who had blooded a lot of those players during the league and had, you know, I suppose, had a bit more, took a bit more from the league than Waterford. But look, nevertheless, I think Waterford maybe just looked at it, this is one game, go out and attack into these lads and see what happens. And when they attacked and when they brought the aggression, Cork just weren't expecting it. They just didn't know what to do and they couldn't react. And that Jamie Barron goal turned out to be the difference in the end. It just kept that arm's length within themselves in Cork. And, you know, okay, Alan Connolly's goal towards the end there obviously brought it back a small bit. But realistically, Waterford here were probably, they were probably 6 points better than Cork realistically.
Yeah, no, I think they had a bit more in the final straight than it seemed. And they got that insurance score almost directly after the Cork goal had gone in as well to make sure it was a 3-point deficit. I'm not trying to serve you a humble pie in any way here, Skell, but last year we were obviously very critical of the way that Waterford were set up under Davy Fitz. And we looked at some of the, let's say, withdrawn forwards and not having a scoring threat. And then yesterday against Cork, they played some wonderful attacking hurling.
Yeah, and look, I have to, humble pie is one thing, but I can't, personally speaking, hack bullshit. You know, I just can't. I can't deal with it. So if any Waterford person is listening to this podcast and they fully believe 100% that if they played with the same structure they did in the league or the last year championships, they were going to beat Cork, you're lying. You're just talking shite, okay? That's exactly it, okay? Me and Murph, we approach this from an evidence-based approach. We're always saying that, and the evidence wasn't there. So two things happened, right? Number one is Cork came with a complacent attitude, which is the truth. It's the truth, okay? And the second thing is, Waterford cut out the bullshit. They went with an orthodox formation. They put their best personnel in the best positions. There was no people filling positions that shouldn't be there at all. And there was people occupying spaces at certain areas of the pitch where they should be. You know, so when you piece that together, and we've always said numerous times, Waterford have excellent players. We've always said that. They just need to be facilitated and structured in the right manner, which is exactly what happened. And once you mix that in with the, let's call it the local passion of the Waterford crowd, like, you're going to get a good result. Now, did I see that coming? I didn't, because I haven't seen it over the last, you could say, two seasons. All I've seen was bullshit, right? So now that seems to be eradicated, and now they can get on a run here. So, yes, they got a great result yesterday, but credit where credit is due. Waterford showed up yesterday. They did what they were supposed to do, and they won the game. Cork, on the other hand, like, I'm really disappointed on them, because I've been saying over the last maybe two seasons, I've been putting great value on the fact that they have, you know, youth in youth exuberance, and they have players in abundance at that age.
But are they using enough of that youth scale? Because again, Conor Lehan, Patrick Horgan, it's back to the same few stages again.
No, they haven't. The truth is, they haven't, you see. They just haven't. And, you know, they had, I'm open to correction now, but I think by my count, they had four forwards taken off yesterday. You know, if you're taking off forwards, that's a bad, you know, review, let's say, of your whole setup. If you take off one per section, backs, midfield, okay, fair enough. But when you're taking off four forwards, it's a bad sign of what has been produced up to then. And, you know, there has to be radical changes, because now you've seen what they've done, you know, yesterday, those four forwards, right? Now, do you trust them to go and do better? Do you produce something better? Because that's the evidence you were showing yesterday now as a management team. So do you trust them now to go right and produce something way better to beat a Clare side that are going to be coming down hurt and ready to knock you out of the championship? That's what's on the line here. That's the fine marriage now. So Pat Ryan has an awful decision to make here. Does he go with youthful guys? Truth be spoken, we only really got to see Alan Connolly in a position of prominence in the second last round of the league, to be honest. He came away with 6 goals and 4 points. Yesterday he rattled, it was 1-3.
Yeah, 1-3. You know, so he's 7 goals in 4 games now.
He's 7-7. He's 7-7 in the games, right? And, you know, his technical skill for the goal was awesome. The way he bounced the ball heading towards, which is great. Where it's all of mindfulness, right? But let's keep that rolling. Let's put in Blarish, put in Hayes, start Robbie O'Flynn. Like, I know Robbie O'Flynn came back from injury, but put those personnel in, you know? And I think from the backs position, I'd be, you know, the backs nowadays, like, you nearly have to be in a full-back line somewhat an athlete first and then a hurler second. That's just the way the full-back line has gone nowadays, right? So I think they'll have to look at that. Like, can they get youthful exuberance and pace into the back line, because they can't be lagging behind the Clare forwards like they were yesterday against Waterford. So there's a lot to swallow here, but I have to re-summarise here. No one in Waterford can tell me that performance was definitely coming. They were living in hope as opposed to expectation. And that's the truth. So some of my friends texted me as well, and up to it, and that's fine. We'll take all that, right? But we made an informed decision. That's a fact. And like, if you were saying Waterford definitely going to win by 3 points, you're talking shite. That's a simple setup case. So I can't give any straighter than that, Will.
Yeah, I don't think John Milan would have even thought that Waterford would be top of the round robin at the end of the first round. So that's where we're at with this. And even,
but in fairness to him, I met him coming out after yesterday's game, and I said, "What about your lads?" And he goes, "Could surprise you." So that's what he said.
Like, surprise. There you go.
Yeah.
Man who loves his county, a man who would never betray his county when it comes to having trust in them going into the championship. And to be fair, Tommy Welsh was on Off the Ball Breakfast during the week, and he was saying that maybe there was a bit more in Waterford than what some pundits were giving them. So he saw more in the tea leaves than we did ahead of this one. This is what Davey Fitz had to say, by the way, after the game yesterday, about kind of channeling some of that criticism that they were getting ahead of the match.
All we can do is work hard, and we'll enjoy today, but we still know we have work to do. We're not there. We have work to do, but the fighting spirit that they showed, really happy with it, but we have more to do.
How much of a motivating factor, Davey, was that noise outside the camp?
To be honest with you, not really, no. It, like, you'll have people that'll want to say stuff, that's fine. Everyone, like, the one thing I've got to accept from the players, people have opinions, and you've got to let them have them opinions, whether they're good or bad, and you accept them. And if people want to give out about Davey Fitz or the Waterford team, let them off. They're entitled to do that. Let them off. It doesn't feel nice because we're working so hard, but we can't dwell on that. What we decided to dwell on was us and what we could do a small bit better, and I think that's the most important thing. So it was nice today to have the Waterford supporters behind us and hear them cheering Waterford. It's nice. And it'd be nice with days like this all the time. I can't say we will, but all I can tell you is I think you see how hard we worked, and we'll continue to try that. Like, we're in with a chance now, no matter what. We've a chance of getting out, and you never know. So, but teams are going to be ready for us now as well. It was a bit easier today going in as underdogs. We were wrote off. I think Waterford normally went to the Munster Championship favourites. Not a bad way to come in the way we went in. So we'll see, but it's tough. We know what's ahead of us.
There you go, Murph. Let them off. Let people be critical. And they're giving themselves a chance. Now, the thing I think is important, I think he's right. You can't use a "we've been written off" motivation multiple times. You can do that once.
Yeah, completely. You can only do it once. And now, as he says there, like, the cat is out of the bag now for the rest of the teams. Like, if any bit of complacency was within the other teams thinking that they were going to get the points of Waterford, whether they do or they don't, that complacency will be gone in terms of approaching the game. And like, that's at the expense of Cork now. And, like, you know, it's very naive out of Cork as well. Cork have put themselves in a very tough position. Like, they're going to face into a Clare game now where Clare will be disappointed with the last 10 minutes of their game, but really putting the All-Ireland champions to the pin or the collar. So it's a tough position for Cork to be in. But for Waterford now, I think regardless, okay, they make a trade-off here of the fact that teams will be expecting them, but they'll take great confidence from yesterday now as well, knowing that, okay, we hurled poor during the league, but when we are aggressive and we get in teams' faces and we run really hard at teams, we're capable of racking up scores, we're capable of beating teams, and we're capable of causing problems, and we still have the players to do that. So the trade-off there for Waterford of going, okay, teams are going to be expecting us now, and they'll maybe have a plan for us. Well, the confidence that they're going to take, you know, I can guarantee as well, I suppose the Waterford support will be there as well for them for the rest of the championship, because there is now a glimmer of hope of them realistically qualifying out of Munster. It just depends on what happens from here on in. So it's look, yeah, you'll only get away with it once, but I think once is all they need at this stage. And what better game to happen in than the first game? You know, if this happened maybe three games in and time is against you, yeah, it's tough. But straight out the door, a victory, and they're off next. Yeah, they're off next week as well. So it's you know, it's a really good position to be in. And you know, look, he's right in what he's saying. Look, forget what they're saying outside the camp. I'm sure they used it to an extent for this and to be fired up for this. But like you said, Will, you use that once, you get rid of it now, and you suppose you turn your focus and your aggression and, you know, all your ambition into something that's a bit more long term in terms of, look, realistically, we want to be getting out of Munster, whatever that looks like. We want to get out of Munster, and we want to be into an All-Ireland quarter-final as well. So there's, and whatever Munster looks like after that, happy days. But at least looking like they're going to qualify now is the big carrot for those Waterford players.
Yeah, so Waterford's plan from here, they've the break week for them this weekend. They play Tipperary then on the 4th of May, which is on the bank holiday weekend. Then they're not playing the weekend after, and then they're back out for their last two games, where they go to Clare on the 19th of May, and they finish up away from home at the Gaelic ground. So you're thinking if they're going to make hay, that game on the 4th of May is really important for them against Tipperary, which is their last home match before they go away in the last two. We'll do Cork and Clare and Limerick and Tipperary in a lot more detail on the members pod, which will be out on Tuesday. But Cork and Clare, lads, this weekend, are Cork going out of the championship?
Well, I have a random question for you first, Will, right?
Go on.
But it's drawing as tight as this, right? So
no, I like random questions.
Well, Limerick made their comeback yesterday, right? It was so evident that you could point to Finn, Lynch and Hegarty, okay?
Yep.
When Waters were going well yesterday and throughout the core game, you could point to DeBurka, Barron, Bennett / Kiley, right? Easily. Mm-hmm. I'm right at the Cork now at the minute, right? I have written down Connolly. I have nobody else. Have you anybody else that was impressed you yesterday that kept the fight? I don't have anyone.
I thought Darragh Fitzgibbon hurled well at times during the game, but I thought Cork were so, so disappointing. And not just because we had blown them up going into the game, but because you look at that team. And I did wonder a little bit about the team that was selected on Friday. I wondered if that was the team that was actually going to take the pitch. And I was just thinking, are they going to beat Waterford? And like, it's not trying to be smart after the fact here, but when I saw the Waterford team on Friday, I thought, this is a very different selection to what we've seen up until now as well. And I wondered if those 15 met each other, was it then an open opportunity for Waterford? But the bookmakers had Waterford 3-1 against going into the game.
Yeah. So, to be honest, it feels very similar to, I was at the game, it was the third round. It was the one where the wheels came off the bandwagon for Waterford 2 years ago.
A couple of years ago.
I was at that in Welsh Park. It was the exact same. It was a replica, really, except roles reversed. For the game that happened the weekend, Cork were looking like they were going to be out of the Munster Championship. It was a formality for Waterford this stage that they were going to go and beat them. And all the talk at the time was Waterford, Limerick, Munster final, and that potentially Waterford could beat Limerick. And there was a lot of hype around it. And nobody, including ourselves at the time, gave Cork a chance. We were saying, no, Cork haven't got enough. And maybe similar to the first question you asked there, Will, of, the siege mentality, and you can use it once. Cork used it once, and they used it in that game, and they turned over Waterford. And that psychologically hurt Waterford so much, they just couldn't get it back going for the rest of the Munster Championship and exited afterwards. But for Cork here now, it's like, flip those roles around. They came into this game, prime position. Everybody was talking of a Cork win, including ourselves, and Waterford turned them over. Now it's a case of, does that mentally hijack Cork now? I mean, is this going to be something where they go, at the end of the day, they have no time to think about this. And even though Clare lost their game and the way Clare lost it, I don't think Clare take as much of a dejection from their loss as Cork will, because Clare can point to a lot of things. Okay, Brian Lowen said that, there's lots of stuff they can't. There's not many positives. There was a lot of positives from Clare. They hurled really well for 60 minutes. But how well did Cork hurl yesterday? There's not many things you can point at to say it was anyway good. They were almost heading towards double figures after 20 minutes for wides. There's so many things. Their general performance. Who were the aggressors? Waterford. Whenever there was a tussle, whenever there was a bit of a fight for a ball, whenever there was a skirmish, it was the Waterford players were getting up into Cork players' faces, and they didn't want to know about it. So you wonder now, will this hijack Waterford Cork for the rest of the championship now? It'll be interesting to see. You can't just write them off straight away, but it's a tough road they have now to try and turn this around. They have the players, absolutely, but how they react now is going to be the big test for them.
Yeah. Something again I'm going to touch on in the members pod a lot, but it was something I looked at going into the weekend. I don't understand why Leinster Council put all their games up against Limerick, against Clare, first of all. It definitely affected the attendances. For anyone who watched the Sunday game and saw, there was a bunch of Carlow fans who had a whole section of Salt Hill to themselves yesterday, the lack of crowd that was in for that game. And similarly, Nolan Park, it was just fans dotted around the stadium as opposed to any significant crowd being in. Look, maybe there's a nature of the fact that Galway and Kilkenny are huge favourites to go back to the Leinster final, the fact that Kilkenny are going for 5 in a row, that maybe people are waiting and didn't want to use up a sunny afternoon to go and watch a game where both those teams were expected to win and win handsomely. But I thought particularly Dublin against Wexford deserved a better slot in the weekend than going up against Limerick and Clare being on the telly. And also the fact that there was no streaming coverage of all of a huge game. And as it worked out, it became a draw and a very exciting end to the game as well. I can't understand why that wasn't given a different spot. If anything, it was beautifully set up to play Wexford and Dublin on the Saturday and have that as a kind of standout game in Leinster for the weekend. And I kind of wonder about Leinster just not getting its fair shake when it comes to games as well. I know the game between Kilkenny and Galway is on TV this weekend, but generally there's a real apathy towards showing any hurling within Kilkenny at all. Now, credit to the Sunday game, they showed a considerable amount of highlights from Wexford Park last night. And we got a bit from the other two matches that took place in Leinster. And we had a very rare sighting of Joe McDonagh outside of the final, which was on TV on the Sunday game as well, where they showed some of the Laois and Offaly games. So there are steps forward, but there is a real feeling that there's this really exciting Munster Championship off to one side and Leinster's being played out in the shade. And it doesn't help when the Leinster fixtures are going up against the biggest hurling game of the weekend. But we can examine that a little bit more. I want to use the rest of the time to talk about what happened in the games, because Skell Wexford will be sick here. Coming off the back of a very good campaign in the league, they find themselves 5 points up going into injury time. Lee Chin shooting the lights out during the game as well. 1 goal and 12 points. Rory O'Connor scored that beautiful score from the sideline as part of his 4 points from play. Looks like they're going to run out winners. Finally going to get one over Dublin. Well set to finish up in third place, even though it's the first round. And then Dublin show that little bit of grit, that little bit of determination towards the end of the game. Danny Sutcliffe with 1-2, Keno Sullivan with the 1-2 as well. Both of them with goals that I would say were well crafted, even when the delivery was quite direct in. But Keith Rosser saying this is just a nightmare 3 minutes for Wexford, where it's a huge blow to them for championship, but a huge blow psychologically to blow a lead like that as well.
Yeah, in fairness to Wexford, they put themselves in position to win the game. They got big personnel back on the pitch, which was a question mark before. They suffered an awful lot of injuries in the league, so to get them back, you know, similar to Waterford, the complexion of the team was very different. And you know, from the highlights pack, which is all we were served to see, it seemed like Wexford were in control for large periods. But I'd be disappointed now if I'm a Wexford player or management in the manner in which we conceded the 2 goals, because if we're going to sit here and be kind of critical of Clare in terms of their defensive structure, we have to apply the same criticism to Wexford, because the 2 goals were, for me, very similar. You know, very similar, long direct balls, primarily won by Dublin, or primary possession and secondary possession won by Dublin on a break, you know, and there was no personnel from Wexford there to stop that. So at that stage of the game, all that's going to beat you or draw you is going to be goals. So, like, again, Wexford, which we've had structure issues in the past, I go back to 2019, they should have just pulled the house back and just got rid of that, you know. And ultimately, they left themselves open and lost the breaks. And like Sutcliffe's goal, sometimes you can take that will, because once might happen, could happen to any team, even the best of them. But this, like O'Sullivan's goal, that can't happen. That can't happen at that stage. That needs to be, the place needs to be flooded, you know. Like I have a vivid image in my head of watching, what semi-final was it? It was a semi-final in 2022. When Kyle Hayes came back into the full back line for a long range Galway delivery. So he was playing up the forwards, he came back in, and himself and Hegarty, or whoever, no, not Hegarty, but it was Kyle Hayes, and he's the one who caught the ball. So Limerick planned for this, you know, for this situation. So Wexford, I think, would be disappointed in the manner in which they conceded the goal. But ultimately, all is lost. If they were 2 points up and the goal conceded, it'd be a devastating situation, but they came away with something. I know the reaction of the Wexford players would tell you, you know, that they were sick. You know, there was hurdles hitting the ground and hurdles thrown. And which is fair enough, that's what you'll be when you're in control for such a large portion of the game. But ultimately, they came away at which point. Score difference now is going to be ultra critical in this, because from my perspective, I think Galway and Kilkenny are going to beat both Wexford and Dublin. So it's going to be a fight for third place, and the only way they're going to fight for it, I think, is going to be down to score difference. So Carlow and Antrim, you know, they're going to have to be... Look, if you're in the crosshairs of Wexford and Dublin now, they're going to have to be lambs to slaughter somewhat. I don't want to be disrespectful, but that's what's going to happen. You know, if you try to get as close as you can to Galway Kilkenny, obviously try to beat them, but I just can't see it happening myself. And then score difference becomes ultra critical. And I think if it's very similar score difference, it becomes scores for, isn't that right?
Yes, that's the... Yeah. So scores basically, four. You kind of head to head now. If the two of them finish level, because it was a draw, so next determiner is the score difference, and then it will be scores four after that.
Yeah, so shoot the lights out. That's what you have to do. And defend more. Sorry, speaking of two defenders here. Don't let in goals. Don't let them score.
Well, I don't know. Credit up to Dublin as well, Murph, because that could have felt like it was game lost. They worked the 2 goal chances, and now they've given themselves a real chance to qualify. I don't think you can assume that Galway and Kilkenny will beat both of them, because Wexford have got this really good record against Kilkenny. But for Dublin now, with some key personnel coming back in, they've given themselves a right chance to qualify.
Yeah, they have. And I think even, like, I suppose Antrim will feel that, given the result in Corrigan Park, that they, that could have went their way against Dublin, that, you know, even Antrim might have a crack at Dublin. You know, if, I suppose, if all the games are to play out the way you expect them, you'd be seeing that, yeah, it might come down to score difference with Wexford and Dublin. But it may prove to be a bit more trickier than that. Wexford, like you said, you know, Wexford go and play Kilkenny, like, those results... Wexford have really put it up to Kilkenny in different times and gotten results off Kilkenny. But likewise, you know, Wexford haven't beaten Dublin, I think it's 5 years now, five, maybe 6 years now.
6 years,
and
yeah.
A very similar result, I think it was actually Dublin beat Wexford in Wexford Park maybe 2 years ago, I'm going to say now. I just remember that great block from Danny Sutcliffe there. I think it was on Liam Ryan, the last one of the last pucks of the game. So, like, Dublin have this thing with Wexford, in fairness to him, if you're to say also then that Wexford have a bit of a thing on Kilkenny as well. So maybe not all is not going to play out as simply as we think. But I think just looking at it now, you know, Kilkenny, particularly after playing Wexford so far in the league this year, Derek Ling will have Kilkenny fairly revved up for that game as well. And being fully aware that, you know, Wexford come with great aggression to play Kilkenny. They get results off Kilkenny in the past as well. And Derek will want to keep everything in his own hands there. But when Wexford are fighting for potentially a third place at that stage, that'll make Wexford very dangerous as well. So it may not play out exactly as we think it's going to be. Look, Carlow made life hard for Galway as well over the weekend. Will they make life as hard for other teams? I don't suspect so. I think teams will come at them fairly hard, particularly if there's going to be a score difference needed as well. So, look, it may not be as straightforward, but at the same time... look, if Kilkenny get their backs up, you see them beating Dublin and Wexford. It's just going to come down to a toss of the coin then. Similar enough for Galway, but it's going to come down for a toss of the coin then with the fixture in Pearse Stadium next weekend.
Yeah, we'll talk about Carlo Galway in a second, but Skell, Dublin are a slightly different prospect when Owen O'Donnell's there, Chris Cummie's back in the team, Donald Burke is fit again. You're getting that return from Sutcliffe and from Keane O'Sullivan. Compared to the team that we saw earlier on in the league, this is a bit of a different Dublin side now.
Yeah, well, look, if you look at professional sports, they'd say the fastest method of improvement, as I've said before, is recruitment. So, like, what you have is when you get your big players back, just like Watford, you know, you improve dramatically because just their ability is better than others. It's that simple. So, when you get Owen Donnelly back and you get Chris Crummy and put them into your defence line, like, you've got a solid set of backs there that, that truthfully speaking, could break into almost every team in the country. So, like, that's the quality of the personnel they have there. And then you bring in Donald Burke, let's say, which is ultra efficiency. It takes the load off O'Sullivan, takes the load off, you know, Dan Sutcliffe, Conor Burke a bit more. So it's just personnel is key. So, and Dublin lead that. Dublin don't have, you know, truth be told, they don't have like 25, you know, top level hurlers that can compete with Limerick, Clare, Galway, Kilkenny. You know, they've got their selection, right, that need to be complemented in by others. So when those lads are on the pitch, they can perform. You know, I just think back last year when they played Clare Will in back down in Limerick in the quarterfinal, and Donald Burke goes off early. It just, like, it sucked the life out of them, and Dublin didn't have the replacements. They didn't have the personnel to come in and pick up the pieces, if you like. So they need all the good players on the pitch, and what they do have a battling quality, in fairness, credit to them, because, like, Wexford, I think the last time they were down there they won. Excuse me. So this, I know this game wasn't a given, you know, by any means it wasn't, but I had backed Wexford to do it. But, you know, Watford have this kind of, they're sticky, you know what I mean, they're really, really sticky, like. So I'm truth be told, I'm sort of, I suppose, showing a bit of Galway bias. I'm kind of half happy for Micheál and the lads, I'd say, because they had a tough campaign. You know, they came through a couple of big defeats, to be honest, like I say. So to get off the championship to, I suppose, a positive start, you know, they would want to win, obviously, but I suppose a positive start is good for them also. But when they meet our lads and Kilkenny, I want them to be beaten, don't get me wrong. And which I think they will. I keep saying that. I feel like I'm cooking it too much now.
Oh yeah, no, you're manifesting a shock now at this stage for someone a few weeks.
Yeah, I feel
will
like
go. You were so sure that they were going to clean them out, weren't you?
Yeah, I should learn my lesson, really, but it takes me like two or three times to learn it. So, like, here I am in my mind. I've said it here publicly three times that yes, Galway Kilkenny are going to beat Wexford from Dublin, respectfully. But now I've had to have thinking to myself, Kilkenny might beat Wexford.
Right, that's all up for decision further down the track. This weekend you've got Wexford going to Antrim, Carlow are going to be at home against Dublin, and, you know, as Murph mentioned there, Skell, Carlow up until about 50 minutes to go, had this down to 4 points in Salt Hill against Galway. Then Galway scored that 1-7 without reply, which saw them pull away. Conor Cooney had 1-10. I think it was 3 points off the bench for Conor Whelan. There's probably a certain feeling that Galway were kind of working their way into championship a little bit here. But for Carlo to go across to Galway and to have them in that position after 45, 50 minutes has to be encouraging for Carlo here.
It's encouraging. Certainly, like if you're one of the teams that say who's come up from the Drummond Tunnel competition, you know, and we stated previously, you're looking for you've your own set of targets. Will, like, I don't think anyone in Carlow realistically will think that, right, we're going to contest the Leinster final, we're going to exit the group automatically. So, like, we have our targets. They'll obviously target retention within the championship. They'll target the Antrim game. They'll target potentially a scalp against someone who's ranked 3 or 4. I won't name them again. And they've tagged good performances, you know, relatively, you know, solid performances against the top two. And that's what they gave yesterday. They gave a solid performance, I have to say. And they showed an eagerness too. Like, I think case in point, if you look at the two goals that Galway conceded, they were of two really good saves by Derek, but who's first arrival? Carlo Mann. So there was an eagerness to get him there, get into position, and they went for it. Like, oh, it just becomes a question of numbers and quality. And like Galway they picked a squad yesterday, 26, and of the 26, let's say 20, at least 23, 24 of them could feature at any stage in the championship against any team. That's kind of the quality they have. Whereas you just can't say the same about Carlo, but they battled and battled hard. I'm not looking at this from a Galway perspective saying I'm disappointed that the margin of victory didn't mirror what Kilkenny did to Antrim. They got the job done. Please God, they came away with no injuries and they move on to the next, which is the big one. And it's always what feels like a precursor to the Leinster final. I actually got shocked when you said there at the start, Kilkenny going for 5 in a row. Like, if you ask me that, how many are Kilkenny going for? I'd have to think about it, you know? When you say 5 in a row, I'm like, Jesus, we got to stop the rot here.
The real drive for five. To hell with Limerick's drive for five. Kilkenny going for 5 Leinsters. Kilkenny themselves, Murph, just because we're tight against the time at the moment, but we'll talk about Galway, Kilkenny in a lot more detail in the members' pod as well. 5:30 to 13 points. TJ started, he scored 1-5. Billy Drennan got 1-6 off the bench. Owen Wall got 2-2. The story, though, probably is, and this really scuppered my fantasy team at the weekend too, Adrian Mullen, Owen Cody going off injured, Owen Murphy went off as well. But that'll be a concern if Mullen and Cody are doubts now for this weekend.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, I suppose, like what the prospect is of them playing at the weekend. We don't really know a whole lot at the moment and haven't heard much about them. But like, it definitely does change complexion. Regardless, okay, Owen Cody wasn't on the scoreboard yesterday, but you know, you reckon if you're going up against Galway and you have intentions of beating them, you need Owen Cody on the field, you need Adrian Mullen, and you need Owen Murphy as well. So any one of those players, like, we'll have to wait out to see for the rest of the week now. Are they going to be named on Friday? That'll be the big question. Or will there be any rumours during the week of how serious the injuries are? Like, any of those players missing, you'd have to say that if Galway have a clean bill of health, you'd have to say that Galway then become favourites, you know. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, they're big enough blows, but at the same time, it may have been in a case that it was being overly cautious by you're laughing at me, Skehel.
I am, yeah.
Oh, it's called Yerra in Kerry now. That'd be Yerra is what that would be. Yerra, so, sure. We won't keep the ball poked out to Galway at the weekend.
So what you're saying, so if Owen Cody and Adrian Mullen and Owen Murphy are missing that, oh yeah, Knuckle Kenny are going to win by 12.
clip that.
You've been inclined to make some rash predictions.
Yeah, I'm out there now at the moment. I have a reputation now to have to try and retrieve somehow. But in fairness, like, it's similar enough. If you look at the Galway side and you're saying, right, Conor Whelan is missing, Cathal Mannion's missing, you know, Fintan Burke is missing, whatever. You're saying, like, okay, well, now the favourite tag probably swings towards Kilkenny again. But it'll just be interesting to see. I don't expect all three of them to miss, to be honest, but you know, Owen Cody has caused problems against Galway previously. Like Adrian Mullen, like we saw him again in the Leinster final 2 years ago against Pádraic Mannion, dragged Pádraic Mannion out of position. They're influential players. And even if they're not necessarily influential on the scoreboard, what they create around the rest of the field in terms of dragging the Galway backs around will be important. So, look, I'd have to say that if two of those players are missing, you know, And Galway have full strength. It's fine margins for this game. So it'll be interesting to see. Look, we'll have to wait out for the rest of the week to see what way Kilkenny are going to be set up. You'd be hoping that they have a full strength, but look, those players missing. I'd have to say from our side, it'd be especially going up to Salt Hill as well. You know,
were they taken off as precaution? Obviously, I don't know because I haven't seen.
I think Mullen is a muscle injury, so that potentially could be a problem for this weekend. I think Murphy and Cody were knocks. So
that's the understanding. Yeah, so. Like, again, have to see. Like, I mean, if it's a case where Mullen is a muscle problem, but it was a bit more of a twinge that he just felt something coming on and he takes off, sure, he could completely play it. But we don't know yet. So, and I haven't heard Derek be saying it anywhere.
Sure, we thought TJ was going to be out for 8 weeks and there he was starting. So, you know, you never do know. Fancy, by the way, if you want to check out any of our social media accounts, I can see Scal here because this is what happened. Uh-oh.
Yeah, look, bad enough, right, that someone in this podcast from Kilkenny, won't name him, puts in at 10 past 12, right, to do your fantasy team, and he knowing well he had an alarm set to send it, right?
The only way this could have been better, Skell, is if he sent it at a minute past 12, but he left the extra 9 minutes.
Well, I left it just in case that the fantasy boys hadn't fully closed it down after a minute, so I said, leave it 10.
Do you know when the WhatsApp comes up, right, and you don't click into it, you can see it in your home screen?
Yeah,
I just saw a fantasy and I looked at the time and I just screamed fuck. So and then to make matters worse, right, Muller and Cody go off.
Yeah, I had the same problem. So,
but you had a good score, Will, though. I checked it there this morning. You were best in the three of us.
Oh no, I was lucky enough. So obviously I had Burns, who scored a goal. Horgan, I think, got 7 points. Galan did a bit of damage as well.
And he got 25 points.
Yeah. Aidan McCarthy got, 110. So, like, didn't do too bad. But now these injuries could result in having to make changes on this window, which is a bit of a problem as well. And changing your captain is also costly. Connor Cooney, who got 110 as well. So, my forwards had a good return. The rest of the team did quite as well.
I'm a bit like Cork now, lads. I'm screwed after round one.
And just to remind anyone, just before we finish, the two boys have got one that I'm not involved in whatsoever. A bet here that whoever loses is getting a tattoo. So, unlucky.
Is that a thing now, is it?
You said to him last Friday, well, when you lose this, you're getting a tip tattoo in your arse. So it looks like Mahomes and a goat is going on you somewhere, I think.
Where did Mahomes and a goat?
Well, that's.
I'll be honest. Up until me going out ahead of Skettle by about fucking 60 points, I was like, there's obviously absolutely no way I'm getting a tattoo. Because for once, it was actually a Skettle that announced it. So I can say anyway, if I lose, I will not be participating. But Skettle, if you lose, you're the one who said it. So you may as well get the tattoo. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. I have to go on the stick on tattoos that my kids have.
I think Mahomes' goat would look well. Right, that has been the Hurling Pod for this Monday here on Off the Ball with Bord Gáis Energy. They are the proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship. The guys are going to be back on Tuesday morning. We'll have the Members Pod where we're going to preview the games coming up in the weekend to come. Plenty to look forward to. Galway against Kilkenny. We've got Tipperary entering the championship for their game against Limerick. And we've got Cork against Clare as well. So plenty to chat about. We will chat to you then. Lads, thanks a million.
Sound, lads.
See ya. Bye-bye, guys.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.